The takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in January gets discussed in open court for the next few weeks, starting today. Ammon Bundy, Ryan Bundy, and five other people go on trial, generally on conspiracy charges, in federal court in Portland. Jury selection is the first step and a potentially long one, maybe a week to set the stage. Maybe a week it'll go on, and then opening arguments about a week from today. To set the stage for the trial, we brought in Oregon Public Broadcasting reporters Amanda Peacher, who covered the refuge closely during the 41-day occupation, and Conrad Wilson, who is covering the courtroom proceedings. Again, because we recorded this in advance, we can't take phone calls during the interview. So, Conrad, let's start with you. From the casual observer's viewpoint, it seems like the trial came together really fast, certainly for something in the federal judicial system. Give me your impression.
Yeah, I mean, it was very fast. A lot of these defendants said that they wanted to exercise their right to a speedy trial, and that got things moving very quickly. Other folks that are in the superseding indictment, prosecutors named, have elected to not exercise their right to a speedy trial and are going to trial in February. So there are actually two trials. The main leaders are going to trial now, and then there's other occupiers who have been indicted that are going to trial come February.
So it is Ryan and Ammon Bundy, certainly. Who else is on trial at this point, and what's the range of charges?
Well, Pete Santilli, he was a kind of a right-wing media journalist that the government says acted as propaganda. Other folks include a guy named Jeff Banta, Neil Wampler. We also have Shauna Cox. She was sort of kind of a public affairs official, especially I imagine we'll get to talking about the 2014 incident down in Bunkerville, Nevada, involving Clive and Bundy, Ammon and Ryan's father. There is also, we listed Ammon and Ryan Bundy, Shauna Cox, Pete Santilli, Jeff Banta, Ken Medenbach. He's a woodworker in southeastern Oregon. And I think, tell me if I'm wrong, I think I've gotten to eight.
Sounds about right.
All right.
Amanda Peacher, I want to come to you because you covered the occupation so closely when it went on. I mean, as things came apart in February at the Malheur Refuge and in Harney County, did you have any inkling that you'd be looking at a trial before the calendar year was even out?
Well, I think that I, along with the rest of the country, while this was going on, was wondering how is this going to end and what will the law enforcement action be? I think there were a lot of questions about what kinds of charges there would be from the federal government for these occupiers. And so now it's fascinating to see how a conspiracy charge is the, would you say, lead charge in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's the main charge for sure. It's like, and it comes with 6 years in prison. And everything else is really kind of filtering into that. I mean, like the weapons charges, use of a firearm in a federal facility. I mean, that's kind of in furtherance of the conspiracy. And you also asked about other charges. There's theft of government property that some of the defendants face, but not all.
And so there were a lot of people who were saying during the course of the occupation, like, why aren't these occupiers charged with domestic terrorism? Isn't what they're doing kin to terrorism? And that's eventually not the charge that the government pursued. So I think it's fascinating to watch how a conspiracy charge will play out in the courtroom, because that's a very different thing than other possible charges that they could have looked at.
Conrad Wilson, through all the pretrial motions and all the hearings in court, did you get a sense for what the general thrust of the prosecution was in that sense, why they chose not to think of this in terms of terrorism, or at least call it that?
Well, you know, you can't ask the assistant U.S. attorneys, Billy Williams, the U.S. prosecutor for the District of Oregon, they're not doing interviews, and so I can't. But I have spoken to former prosecutors, and they say, you know, a conspiracy charge is just something that's really typical for prosecutors to use, especially when there's multiple defendants. And the reason they like it is that they can, the crime is the agreement to commit the crime. I mean, really is what they're trying to prove, that these defendants made a plan, and when they made that plan, that moment is the moment that they are guilty of a conspiracy, is kind of what prosecutors and criminal defense attorneys have explained to me. And so why they did it, I don't know, but it is something that is really typical of of prosecutors, and a lot of folks say that, you know, well, it may appear like terrorism when they kind of look through the criminal code and they go about making decisions about how to press charges and what charges to press. I haven't heard a lot of folks question why prosecutors went with the conspiracy charge in this particular case, saying that it's just, you know, it's a classic, it's a kind of a classic conspiracy, is what one prosecutor told me.
Amanda Peach, on the ground as things were breaking up when the 41 days of occupation ended, did you get a sense of what the charges might have been back then based on what the law enforcement people on hand were telling you?
Well, I was really wondering, gosh, are they going to be are there going to be more federal government charges? Are there going to be charges related to breaking and entering into a government facility? So I had a lot of questions about, boy, what's the laundry list that they could be charged with? And it really turned out to be just a few simple charges. And I think I was a little bit surprised by that. But given the what we've heard from prosecutors so far, or at least those prosecutors that Conrad has talked to, it makes sense, I guess.
You know, and Jeff, to walk that back a little bit, I mean, Amanda, we were definitely, I don't know when I was there, when you were there, I mean, I don't know how much we were really thinking about charges as so much, you know, how would this end, as you brought up? Like, is this going to be, I mean, there was still a lot of concern that there could be a lot of violence or just a lot of uncertainty. So I don't know. For me, anyway, when I was there, it wasn't really thinking about how this would play out in a courtroom. It was more, how is this going to end? And I don't know if that was similar for you, Amanda, but.
Well, and you heard from the occupiers often that what they were doing, they likened to the Occupy Wall Street protest. They saw it as no different than taking over a city park in Portland for a given time. But the difference, of course, is that they had weapons and that from the federal government's perspective, that was impeding the ability of federal employees to do their jobs. So I think that First Amendment argument that came out a lot during the occupation is something that we could be hearing some of during the trial, too.
Ammon Bundy took the stand also during kind of the pretrial motions during one pretrial hearing when he was arguing for his release during a detention hearing. And he indicated that they didn't really think that it was going to be the impression I got after he got off the stand was that he didn't think the charges would be as serious as they were. I mean, they were thinking something like trespassing charges. And they did, according to this testimony, you know, they did want to enter the court system. And, I mean, they wanted this to be kind of a political fight that went into the courts. But at least based on kind of that one hearing, this was more serious, perhaps, I was led to believe that they thought, you know, this was more serious than I think they initially thought.
Conrad Wilson and Amanda Peach are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the preparations for the Bundy trial in Portland. Jury selection begins there today. How much maneuvering has there been thus far, Conrad, in what can be included in this trial, what can't? Because there's so many other events, the Bundy standoff in Nevada in 2014 among them, the Lavoie Finicum shooting death. How much of that stuff is going to be heard in court?
Well, there's kind of two things happening, right? I mean, the judge was very clear at one point saying that we are not going to solve the underlying policy issues here. You know, this is, and we kind of going back to that conspiracy charge. I mean, this is really about people making an agreement to commit a crime. And this is the crime that, you know, the government says the crime is that people tried to impede federal employees from doing their job. And so the evidence is really focused to that. And at the same time, though, you know, everyone watching this trial is sort of watching it to see, it's hard to not interpret this as a larger view and kind of the future of the American West. I mean, and sort of what are the ideas about how land should be used and how people view the federal government's role when it comes to managing and its ownership of public land. So there's kind of two things happening there. Specifically, when it comes to evidence, though, I mean, I've been surprised at just how narrow some of the things are. I mean, there is definitely weapons issues, firearms that will be in trial, brought into evidence as trial. There's some discussion right now about what's going to happen with regard to some Facebook evidence that the judge still hasn't decided whether or not that will end up in trial. But it is, I don't know. On the one hand, it is a very narrow focused thing, but on the other hand, there's a much kind of broader thing that people are interpreting from this, despite what the judge may say.
This is not going to be like a lot of state trials that people have gotten used to. No cameras in the courtroom, no audio recording, I understand, too. So how will you cover the trial?
Well, not very many people in the courtroom either. I mean, there's like 25 seats for members of the public, and a lot of that is for reserved for defendants' family members. So, it's going to be a challenge to you basically have a notebook and a pen, and so it isn't great radio. But luckily, I'm a good note taker. So.
And now you're a pool reporter, so just two seats for reporters in the courtroom, is that right?
Other reporters will be able to get in. The pool, there is kind of a reserved seat for the pool report, yes. But the other reporters are going to be able to get in as members of the public from time to time. And there will also be an overflow room kind of broadcasting internally within the courtroom what's playing out in the courtroom. So other members of the public can kind of watch the proceedings.
Since there is that closed-circuit TV feed, I mean, how strict are the federal authorities being about people bringing their cell phones into the room and stuff like that? Will be there live tweeting allowed? I mean, they're going to make sure that nobody has a camera to be able to Facebook Live the video proceedings, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, the only people that are allowed to bring anything like that into the courtroom are the attorneys themselves, the prosecution, the judge. I mean, there's the concern is that there could be an alternative record, and really the idea is to preserve kind of this one written and one recorded record of what happened. So if there are questions in the future about who said what when, or what evidence was introduced, there isn't a supplemental record that people could come up with an alternative version of kind of what played out in the courtroom. So yeah, no cell phones, no live tweeting. There are recesses where, I'll be able to get out and grab my cell phone outside of the courtroom and kind of phone in a report or fire off a tweet. But it very much so is a stepping back out of the digital age into, just a different kind of reporting.
Conrad, so many of the motions that get made in trials get made not necessarily with either defendants or all the attorneys there at the same time. Have there been occasions when all the players were in the room at the same time? And how would you describe the general tone in hearings thus far?
Well, actually, what's been interesting about this trial is most of the defendants have been in the courtroom for most of the proceedings. Not every proceeding, and there have been a lot of filings that have just taken place kind of in the public record of the court. So just kind of, paper filings from defense and prosecutors. But so, seeing these guys in the courtroom, these men and women in the courtroom on a somewhat regular basis, the tone is really, there's been, for a while there, all the proceedings began with the Lord's Prayer. I mean, all the defendants kind of bowed their head in prayer. There have been outbursts at times from folks in the gallery kind of saying one thing or another about the judge or the system. It's definitely attracted the same people that were interested in the occupation, I would say, are also interested in this trial. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who are describe themselves as avid hikers or birders. And I've also talked to people who are really opposed to what the federal government is doing. And they think that they really see this as sort of, they're very upset with what the federal government is doing. And they really don't see this as a legitimate process at all. They see these guys as, sort of patriots or people that have, Boston Tea Party. I mean, like going back to the great lineage of what our country's about. When we don't agree with something, we protest. And so there's a lot of supporters along those lines too. And it's just been interesting to have conversations with people at the courthouse on both sides that sort of want to know more about what's happening in the court proceedings.
Now, miles from the courthouse, Amanda Petra, I assume you've been back to Harney County a few times since the occupation ended. What is there a general mood you could describe there about the pending trial?
Sure. So people are definitely following along and wondering how it's all going to play out. I think there's a lot of occupation fatigue in Harney County. People are a little bit tired of it being the focus of conversations, and there's still quite a bit of division in the community between those who sympathized on some level with the occupiers, and those who absolutely opposed them wanted them out the whole time. So I think you're going to kind of see that continue through the course of the trial. And I think as much as Harney County wants to forget about all of this happening, you know, at least some people in Harney County, they're going to be following along, because the outcome of the trial over the next few months really sets the tone for what will happen if you try to sort of have this kind of standoff with the federal government in the future. I mean, the consequences for the occupiers could lead to further demonstrations against the federal government, or it could lead to an understanding of what the actual consequences are if you do take this kind of action. So I think people in Harney County are watching to see what happens to these eight individuals who so affected their lives for more than 41 days since the beginning of this year, really. And I think that they'll be very fascinated with watching the course of the trial.
Given that backdrop, Conrad Wilson, final question. How much time has gone into winnowing the jury pool even before we get to the official jury selection?
Well, there's definitely been some discussions that have played out in the courtroom. I think like something like 1,500 jury summons went out all over Oregon. And many people then, for whatever reason, said they couldn't or could. And the judge sent out a questionnaire as well, so that both prosecutors and the defense were able to get a better sense of who these potential jurors were. And so, I mean, there was one day where, gosh, I think we went through more than 100 jurors who were challenged, and the judge basically ruled, you know, we'd either have them in for more questioning or they were dismissed. I mean, for everything from saying they think these guys are guilty to these guys are patriots to I have a hip replacement scheduled in mid-October and I'd really like not to reschedule it. So there's all sorts of reasons. But yeah, jury selection will be a next phase that begins later this week. And they're winnowing it down to 20 jurors, 12 trial jurors, and 8 alternates.
That's a lot of alternates.
It is, yeah. It is a lot. Yeah, it'll be... They're hoping to have it. The judge is hoping to have the jury selected by the end of the week.
Amanda Peacher from Oregon Public Broadcasting covered the refuge takeover as it was happening. Conrad Wilson will be covering the proceedings in court. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
Now, after the chat with Conrad and Amanda, federal prosecutors dropped all charges against Pete Santilli, the self-styled internet journalist. There are now 7 defendants then. Santilli still faces charges in Nevada in the standoff at the Bundy Ranch with federal agents in 2014.